Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Aiken City Council work session, November 12th, 2007. And we have one item to talk about, work session. It's a city court operation process. And so, Roger, would you lead us into that, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The city court operation, if we look back just a few years ago, was being handled by one individual, Chuck Simon. Chuck is now retiring many long years of faithful service to the city of Aiken. And so we need to, and at that time, a couple of years ago, we made a decision to go to two judges, two part-time judges. And we're now at a point where, with him leaving, it allows us some flexibilities to look at a number of situations. One of the situations that we feel very strongly about that we feel we have to do is based on discussions with the Municipal Association and looking at just possibly some ethical things. Right now, the judge works, and they will continue to work very closely with our public safety department, but we really feel there needs to be a separation between the court system and public safety, where finances are all separated to the court system. We would go ahead and take Ellen Shelley, who's been working with the court system for a long, long, long time, and put her underneath it, so that we would have an actual separate division or department for city court. That way, no one could ever come to us and say, well, that judge is working for public safety, and therefore the decisions they're rendering could be biased based on the fact that they're working with public safety. So that's one situation that we'd like to go ahead and change, and that would be moving the court operations and separating it from public safety. That doesn't mean that it may still be in the same building. It probably will be. But there would be more of a separation between the two. The other thing that we're looking at is, as we move forward, is to having more flexibility with the judge. Right now, court is held, and historically has always opened up early in the morning. It runs until the cases are finished. That might be an hour and a half, might be 2 hours, might be 3 hours. It was Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and then about every 6 to 7 weeks, we would have jury trials. Judge Tracy Carroll came in, who's here tonight. We then went to the traffic court, or bench trials, were done Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It shortened the number of hours. And then on Friday, we had jury trials in livability court. Again, with the new system, no matter how we do it, again, we want to have a little bit more flexibility. Right now, when there's an inmate already been imprisoned over at the county jail, we have to pick that person up, bring them all the way to our courtroom. It takes public safety time. Some of Pete's men taking that person back and forth, where we can go ahead and either hook forth there, we actually have a courtroom at the jail, or you could do some telecommunication and talk to Clay Killen on that, and that's something we certainly could look into. Those are a couple of changes that we would definitely recommend to you, that we separate the court system and that we will be looking at some flexibility with however system we work towards. The question that we come to council tonight, and we have given you some statistics. I had said that the number of cases has increased by 30% the last 10 years, about 3% a year. I mean, that's a lot, but the way we're going in Aiken, that's really not a lot. But you can see that in 98, 99, we had about 7,000 cases, and now we're up to well over 10,000, and we're still growing. So we know we're going to continue on that path. It's been a pretty constant change when we look at time versus number of cases, and we feel that's going to continue in the future. So we're at a point now of saying, do we go ahead and stay with the two-judge system, or do we combine all of our salaries that we have and go ahead and just hire one judge that would be working basically 40 hours a week for the city of Aiken, which then would give us different flexibilities. I know that Richard's here, who works the court system. Pete's here, who obviously works very closely, and then Tracy Carroll's here. So that's where we're at tonight. Chuck Simon retires on the 31st of December. I was trying to figure out how many days there were in December. The last day of December, thank you. That's not spring. April, June, May. So he'll retire at the end of December, at which time then we'll have to do something if we have not made a decision at that time or have not hired someone in whatever way we move forward. We would be asking our current judge to see if they could expand the amount of time. We also work with Kristen Kinney, who's also been appointed by you all, and she could probably go ahead and do some work for us at the same time. So with that, we dropped...
Richard, would you like to comment, please? Give us your thoughts, opinions, whatever.
Mayor, thank you very much, and I appreciate council taking time to address the concerns. It's really even more than just the increase in the number of cases that are coming through the city court system. The Chief Justice of the South Carolina Supreme Court is conducting a top-to-bottom review of magistrate and municipal courts, and particularly their pending dockets. As you may have read in the paper from time to time, she's introduced different technologies into our court system to track cases, but to also make sure that people are receiving their justice in a timely fashion. And as Roger mentioned, the Municipal Association is also recommending that we separate the city court operation from the public safety operation for a number of reasons. And as Judge Carroll can share with you, based on some reprimands that have been issued to certain court judges. The reason that tonight's discussion is so critical is that we really have kind of a separate system right now. We have the routine daily court, and then we have jury trials. And I think there's an opportunity for counsel to set up a system so that we can dispose of cases in a more timely manner and not have as much of a carryover docket. For instance, if someone came to court on a regular session and requested a jury trial, as you see in my memo, there's typically a delay before they actually come in and pick a jury. And Judge Carroll's instituted a system in her magistrate's court where someone requesting a jury trial picks a jury when they make the request. So there's not that delay. And, of course, so many times if folks know that a jury of six independent people are ready to kind of come and occupy those chairs in the courtroom, somehow they get a totally different idea of what justice would be in their particular case. I started working with the city back in 1998. As Roger mentioned, about 7,000 cases. That would be traffic cases, criminal arrests, and DUI cases, total just over 7,000. The fiscal year 2005-2006, we totaled over 10,000, and Pete came in this afternoon. We took a look at kind of our year so far, and we're already over 5,500 cases, which, not that many years ago, maybe when Judge Simon's first started presiding, would have been the total workload for the entire year. Now we're reaching that figure in 5 months' time. And if the cases are continuing to be made, we're projected to exceed the 10,000 mark and maybe do 12 or 13,000 cases. And council will recall at your last meeting that you did approve receiving a grant so Pete could have two additional traffic officers to enforce traffic laws in the city. All of that is good, but we just need a court system in place that can handle the anticipated increased load. And I just think, too, from a prosecutor standpoint, prosecutors in South Carolina kind of have a special place because, they're certainly there to conduct trials and gain convictions, but really the ethical duty is to make sure everyone receives a fair trial. And with victims of crime, with the defendants themselves, to have that case disposed of in a timely manner really is the fairest to everyone, concerned with the case.
Richard, what's your recommendation?
Gosh, Mayor, we have to make a decision now.
Right. And again,
in working with this for 9.5 years and going, you know, getting, I attend the municipal attorney's meetings and certainly have had the benefit of some discussions from folks from court personnel, court administration who've come and made presentations. You know, when you look across the state, you just see so many different kind of systems. The Charleston model uses 4 part-time judges, but they have their livability court that we modeled, as well as other diversion programs and specialized courts. And they've just decided to have a judge assigned to each section. In some ways that is good, but in some ways that's not, it's not good, because if you have 4 different judges and they have their courtroom, you know, and then one courtroom operates for 1 hour and the other operates for 9 hours, then, you know, you're still experiencing the backlogs. The towns that have a full-time judge have someone in place who can not only move cases along, because in effect the court doesn't close. I mean, it's not just there for 2 hours each morning and then sporadically with a jury trial. You could have regular court in the morning, jury trials in the afternoon. With a full-time judge, you could certainly have a specialized court, but instead of having different courtrooms where stuff could back up, you could have different days assigned for the different types of courts. In the current system with 2 judges, the benefits to you are that in case a judge has to travel or is ill, there's someone to back the judge up, and they could kind of, in effect, cross-train so that, you know, that particular judge could hear a jury trial, could hold a regular session of court, preside over a livability court, maybe do a specialized traffic court or DUI court. So more than one judge certainly gives you more flexibility. A full-time judge gives you the ability to get more done. So, you know, in counsel, I'm not really sure what the sense of counsel would be. But they're just, it's just a matter of...
What is there in between when you give a few extra hours to each of the 2 judges?
Mayor, you could certainly do that, and that would be up to counsel.
I mean, it would that... It just seems, you know, logic, just looking at the numbers, when you're gaining so many or you're having so many additional cases,
right,
to cut back to one judge, even though it's full-time, still doesn't add up to me exactly that you could handle everything. Now, Roger and I were chatting just a few minutes ago about perhaps partnering with North Augusta or somewhere else, using their judge occasionally or something.
Well,
Roger can explain it better than I.
Well, I can. And I think the city manager and I had that discussion. You know, if you have one full-time judge, if you got into a situation where your full-time judge had to then travel, you know, there are municipal judges that could come in, and certainly that's what Judge Carroll's been so helpful for, because she's a full-time magistrate, and I think it's hard to take on some other magistrate's work. But she has been able to miraculously arrange her schedule so that on Fridays we're there for organizational sessions or to try cases. I mean, she's just been excellent in coming in. And I guess, to the extent you have a part-time judge, the potential for conflict is much greater. You know, if I'm a part-time judge in private practice, oh, well, you know, I have to go to federal court and do this, or I have to do a real estate closing, or I have to go do this other thing that pertains to my private practice. The idea behind the full-time judge was that you had somebody full-time there who not only can hold court, which is, of course, a very key function, but then provide also an administrative oversight that we really haven't had in place because we've had the part-time judges. And I think with the opinions that we see from the Supreme Court, you know, the Supreme Court and certainly the Commission on Judicial Conduct is holding judges to a much higher standard these days, particularly when it comes to financial accounting and how the court operation is truly separate from other operations within the county, the state, the city. So sometimes, you know, common sense or logic, I think there's a bigger picture, and the idea with the full-time judge would be that somebody would be there and be responsible, and when the courtroom, which now pretty much is empty in the afternoons during the week, that empty time would now become occupied very easily, I would anticipate.
Richard, is there a financial implication of 2 part-timers versus 1 full-time judge? What sort of difference would that make?
And I'm sure Roger probably has some thoughts on that. What I would anticipate with part-time judges is that you would not necessarily pay them benefits.
Mm-hmm.
But the city manager has a sharper pencil than his prosecutor has. And I'm not real sure that we've done a number crunch to figure out you know, what's the cost benefit of a full-time person with benefits versus two part-time persons with no benefits?
I personally lean towards a full-time judge, frankly.
And I appreciate that. It's just the aspect of, with this increasing responsibility, and we already know the Chief Justice is looking at us, so this way you have a system in place where there is somebody who's continually monitoring, that really the potential for conflict with other demands would be far less with a full-time person.
To answer some of the questions that you had, a full-time judge obviously would need to take vacation. They're going to have training. They're going to be out away from the courtroom at least 4 to 6 weeks a year. But when they're on vacation, or if they're going to have to be gone because of training, we will know weeks, if not months, ahead of time, and therefore Pete schedules those court cases to work around those time periods. The times that it becomes difficult is when that person calls in that morning and says they're sick and they can't make it. Well, that's the same problem we have now. If Chuck Simon calls in and says, "I'm sick, I can't come," the chance of us getting someone in at the very last moment is fairly slim anyways. But again, if we knew it was going to be a lengthier time, or it was going to be several days, we could go ahead and have agreements similar to how Pete now has agreements with several of the law enforcement agencies that will allow us to use some of the people that might be in another town to come into Aiken. Or as the county does it, there are several magistrates that they help each other out. Right. As time goes on. As far as the salary is concerned, again, if we go to a full-time judge, we'd be looking at combining the salaries of the current judges we have, the court recorder, and we think that financially we'd be able to come up with a package that would be agreeable to a person to go full-time.
To me, it sounds like...
I really like that. Now, that's the designated substitute you're talking about, then, would be another municipal judge or somewhere else.
We have to have an agreement ahead of time with that other city as to how we pay them and other things, but I believe we could go ahead and work that out.
I really like this idea of doing the jury trials right away. I've seen that played with so many times. I've heard about it so many times, and if we could forego that and the consistency of decision making, I think would probably be a good thing. Can we get Tracy full time? That's my question. We'll see, huh? But the point is, it has to be. And we may find we still need someone for a few hours a week or something. I mean, you can, whoever the full-time person is.
And I think certainly Judge Carroll has stepped up and filled in when the need has been, as her schedule has permitted, and that's been very helpful to us.
But the consistency and the... And like you said, if we had two part-time judges, how do we know they don't have a closing that morning if we have an emergency or something like that? So we're still stuck.
And I appreciate that so much. Ms. Walters, because we've run into that in the last 9.5 years. And if there were a way for us to avoid that, as well as meet this demand for the more responsibility, I appreciate it.
Okay. I'm sold on it. Any other comments? Tracy, you want to say anything? Tracy, we certainly thank you for being a part of the court system here. You've been a real big help, and you're so well thought of. And thank you for serving.
Well, thank you for allowing me to. I've really enjoyed my time at the city. Unfortunately, I think my position prevents me from giving a recommendation. If you go with a full-time judge, I think that I would probably lose my job at the city, my Friday job, and that would be sad. But I have noticed ways to improve the efficiency, and I'm certainly willing to help in any way to make it a smooth transition. One thing I wanted y'all to be aware of, though, regardless of what happens when Judge Simons retires in December, in order for someone to take his place, they do have to go to a judge's school, which not be held until the end of March or April. So you will not be able to replace him to at least that time. So that's going to be a little difficult, and I will certainly help in any way that I can. I don't know if I can be there 4 days a week, but I have noticed things and I've suggested them to Mr. Pierce and Chief Frommer in regards to things that could improve the efficiency, like, for example, going ahead and selecting a jury panel as soon as somebody requests a jury trial. You can't try the case immediately, but at least you have that panel selected and you can go ahead and schedule it. That's going to alleviate some of that backlog there. Also, there's really no need to bring the inmates over every morning from the jail. For example, the county, what we do, we sentence people on bench warrants. So, whereas now the inmates are being transported every day and the officers have to go get them, that's going to just stop that. If you change that practice, that's going to save you so much time every single day. So if you look at these ways to kind of improve the system as it is now, I don't know how much time we'll be saving every day. So, and those are things I'm certainly willing to sit down with whoever and discuss. And I think that I've seen a huge difference in the efficiency in my office just by adopting those practices. And of course, I'll answer any questions that anyone has.
In other words, Tracy, you're not willing to move over to the city full time. You would rather?
Well, I would love to. I don't know if, I just don't know what's being offered, and it's really difficult to put you in that position now. I really have enjoyed my time the last year working at the city, and I will consider anything. I think in the past you had judges that were allowed to work in private practice also. That's not an option for me. I'm not in private practice. It hasn't been difficult at all handling my magistrate's duties and doing the city duties the way it is now. In fact, I still have a lot of extra time on my hands doing both. I understand your concerns. I mean, you don't want a part-time judge that's also in private practice that's running off and doing a closing, and that's something I just can't speak to because that's not an issue for me. That's why I just feel like I can't give a recommendation. I don't know what's the best fit for y'all. And I think that, you know, obviously you need to do what's best.
I will say this on your behalf is that I think you do a tremendously wonderful job as a magistrate. I've seen you in action, and I really have an appreciation for the way you handle those cases. And I know that that would be a tough move for you, but because of that, I do have an appreciation for you and maybe even wanting you to at least throw your hat in the ring should we open it up for a full-time position.
Thank you very much. I would like to do so. But once again, I mean, you have a lot of decisions you have to make.
All right. Thank you, Tracy.
Perhaps you've already answered this question. In comparison to other municipalities, do they have two judges?
Richard talked about that a little bit earlier. Leslie,
I don't want you to repeat it if you've already stated that.
Just want to cover it, summarize it again?
There's a variety of different ways that courts are being operated throughout the state.
I know it depends on cases that you have.
Some have several, some have some full-time. This just, I guess I would look at every time that something like this happens, it allows us to have an opportunity to look now at what can we do different to make the system better. Tracy has been a real innovator. She comes up with a lot of great ideas and has really been a great help. And so between her and Pete and Richard, a lot of discussion has been going on as to what can we do. And there's no one perfect system. Now, if we're a large enough town, we have two full-time judges. That's probably the perfect system. So one full-time judge is gone and the other full-time could fill in. But we don't have that luxury. I do believe that we can put together a salary and benefits package that would hopefully bring in some very good people. And I know Tracy can't say this, but one of her difficult situations is we're under two different retirement systems. She's been under a retirement system, the state system, for a long time, and we have our own separate system. If we're under the state system, it becomes a little bit easier to move from one place to the next. So, which is another decision she would have to make if that was the case.
Okay.
But if you all feel comfortable, I think I'm hearing the consensus is to consider a one-judge system. If that's the case, then we will move forward. We'll get some more information put together and bring it back to City Council just as information to you at a later time.
Okay. Any objections? No objections. Okay. Very good. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you, Richard. Okay, let's move right into council meeting then. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here tonight for Aiken City Council meeting on November 12th, 2007. We appreciate you very much being here, and as we go through our agenda, your comments would be welcome, of course. If you would, please stand with us for a prayer and a pledge. Dear Lord, we thank you for this day, this beautiful day you've given us. We thank you again for the privilege of serving our city, both council members, staff, and also our citizens that work so hard to help us, improving our community, our volunteers. We just thank you for all of these things, Lord, and you've really blessed our community. We thank you for the veterans, Lord, that have served us so well over the years, trying to defend us, our country, and making our country a better place and making other countries better for their people as well. We thank you for all their service, Lord, and many have given everything for that desire for us that we have. We thank you also, a special occasion, Lord, for allowing our Orvieto friends, delegation, to be with us this evening and celebrating our 10th anniversary with our partner city. And we thank you for that. And we thank you for the time that we have together with them as they move on in a couple of days to New York for a little while and then safe trip back. We pray for that. We thank you, Lord, for the wisdom that you will give us. We ask you for wisdom and guidance as we go through our agenda this evening and for every day in the future, Lord, as we all work together to make our community better. And all these things, Lord, we give you the glory and the credit. In your Son's name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We do have an addition to our agenda, and there may be other additions or deletions to our agenda. One very important one that we need to add is the introduction and the recognition and presentation to our Orvieto delegation led by the mayor. And so I'd like to make the motion that we add that to our agenda. And for any others, additions or deletions, do you have any others to that? If not, do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor of adding that under our minutes? Passes unanimously. Okay. The minutes. Consideration of the minutes of the work session and regular meeting of October 22nd, 2007. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor, I move for approval of the minutes of as they have printed.
Second, Ms. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Is any discussion about that? I think there was. So, show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. Okay, it's a real pleasure to have our delegation here. I'm going to ask George to come up in a minute and talk about the PIF organization, but this is a 10th year anniversary. George, you're back there, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay, I thought I saw you there. And there's been so much that's been done between our cities to better our relationships and our friendships. And I collaborated, or George collaborated with me, let me put it that way, because he did most of the work. But there's a letter that I signed concerning the 10th anniversary of our partnership between Aiken and Orvieto, and I'd like to read it, if you will. To the citizens of Aiken, South Carolina, and Orvieto, Italy.
subject 10th anniversary of the partnership between Aiken and Oviedo. As Mayor of Aiken, I wish to recognize and congratulate the citizens of our partner cities, Aiken and Oviedo, for completing 10 years of uninterrupted activities which have promoted an international cultural exchange between the two cities. The following are among the most noteworthy accomplishments. Over 100 high school students from both cities have visited with host families, toured the respective regions, and developed lifelong friendships. Many Aiken students were the recipient of scholarships funded with local support that helped them achieve the international experience. Prominent artists such as Livio Valentini, Leslie Alexander, Al Beyer have exhibited their art in their partner city, advancing cultural and social relations. Culinary activities held in both cities, such as the medieval banquets, have fostered an appreciation of good food and fellowship. Travel and tourism by citizens from both cities have cultivated personal, enduring friendships. Many other activities, too numerous to mention, have been conducted over the last 10 years, which have helped to cement a deep, long-lasting relationship between the citizens of both cities. It is with great pleasure that I recognize, commend, and say thank you to the hundreds of participants in this partnership from both cities for their hard work, dedication, and great accomplishments. Sincerely, me. So that's just a brief outline of 10 years, which is no way you can cover 10 years in this, but that certainly are some of the highlights. George, would you like to come forward now and introduce our guest? And I'm going to come down also because council has a couple of gifts that we would like to give out. Yes, sir. I'll wait a minute till you finish saying what you want to say. And this guy was the one that started this whole thing, if you don't already know that, anyone here. He's the guy. And what a wonderful job he's done leading the whole partnership group.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor, for inviting me here tonight. And also thank you, City Council, for having us here tonight. And it doesn't seem like 10 years that I was at the state in this very room, at this very spot, asking your concurrence with going ahead with this project, and I got it. And 10 years later, here we are. We've done so much, and I think the mayor did a great job in outlining all of the things that we've accomplished in the last 10 years. So we're very proud of that, and I want to thank also the many participants and members of Partners in Friendship. We have about 120 members right now. And I also want to thank the University of South Carolina and Aiken for their support and contribution. And before I introduce our distinguished guest, I would like to read a note I got from Olivia Lazzo Valentini, who is my good friend in Orvieto, who helped me set up this partnership 10 years ago. And it's written in Italian, so I'll have to translate it for you. It's dated November 2007, and I just got it. In fact, it was brought to me by the mayor. I'm very happy to participate in the 10th anniversary of this partnership with Oviedo Aiken. Remembering my travels to Aiken amongst you, and happy and wishing that I will see you soon. In some way, I hope that it will happen. A strong embrace with sentiments of strong friendship, Livio Orazio Valentini. And in case you don't remember Livio, he was artist in residence at UFCA for many years and did a tremendous amount of art, brought a tremendous amount of his art and did a lot of artwork here in Aiken. So he really raised our culture, I think, experience here in Aiken. And unfortunately, he's reached an age where he hasn't traveled much anymore, so I don't expect that we'll see him in Aiken again, but it was really wonderful that he was able to write this note to me. Okay, without further ado, I'd like to introduce our distinguished guests from Oviedo. First of all, I would like to introduce the president of the City Council of Oviedo, Mr. Evasio Gialletti. like to also introduce the mayor of Oviedo, the current mayor of Oviedo, Stefano Mocho, Dr. Stefano Mocho. And the interpreter and a very good friend who has been with the partnership all 10 years, Erica Bazzari. And I just like to concludes my remarks, and would you like to?
Yes, would you all come up?
There you go. Erica?
George, thank you. You don't have to go away now.
Yeah.
On behalf of the City of Aiken and the City Council, we not only thank you for being here again, we've spent a lot of time together. And it's been fun. And we have several gifts we want to give.
This is the pen. Thank you.
That's not all now. Okay. Some time ago, we made some of these and didn't make very many of them, and they were put away, and I remember them today, as a matter of fact. And I'm going to take one apart. It's just a very simple paperwork. But it has, I don't know who's up here now, but they're all the same thing. That's a whole lot of paper, so it won't blow away. Okay. And one last thing for your office, I presume. This is from Aiken Artist and Lattimore. I think you brought this out. And I'm not going to take this out, but I hope that you can see this.
It's because it's
a fox hunting scene. Some brilliant colors, and it's typical of Aiken, what we have here in Aiken. We knew that we needed to have something fairly small so you could put it in your suitcase if possible.
Thank you for seeing this.
Very, very nice.
Very nice.
From that, he's one of our wonderful artists.
Very nice.
So I'm going to put it back in this bag.
Yeah, that's good.
Don't think that I bought this at Hobby Lobby just because I've done it. It was available at the time. So, hope you will enjoy these when you go back. Thank you for your gift this morning. Good to get you here. And,
does he have comments? Do they have comments they want to make?
I will say that we spent, the schedule has been really hectic. It's been back to back. And with the wonderful reception that was last night, and this morning we took an hour tour of all over the town. Came back and met with our staff. Our staff, every member was there this morning. And we had some excellent discussions, I think, and we found a few things that we can work on together. Some things that you're doing that perhaps we're not doing, and vice versa. So we've agreed to get back together, teleconferencing, or however the best way to do, and then work on some of these differences. So we look forward to that. There have been many Aikenites have been over to Oviedo many times. I know one five times, and probably another one that's more like six or seven.
See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. And we can't say enough about this lady. She's been with us from day one when we first went over. When we first, the delegation from Aiken, 11 of us went over to Orvieto in March of 97.
Right.
And that's when we all met for the first time.
Yes. And I feel very much at home at this point.
Good.
I've been here, I don't know how many times. I've lost count.
We felt very, very much at home about 1 minute after we met everybody when we were over there.
Right.
It's just a wonderful experience. If someone here hasn't been there yet,
we don't want to. All of you. Just don't all come together.
Well, thank you so
thank
much
you.
For being here. I know you have something to do.
Mayor, I just want to say to the mayor and to the council member and to Pim and Pam, we thoroughly enjoyed your worshiping with us on yesterday at our services. And Erica, we enjoyed your comments at worship services. Thank you for coming.
And let me just add, I see all the hosts, Bob your host, and George the host, and Grandma's host. Thank you for hosting. And all of you do for PIF and for the city. And we look forward and we are glad to work with you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Under old business, first item is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to rezone property at 616 Park Avenue Southeast from RS6 residential single family to MLB limited business. Mr. Woodruff, please.
Yes, sir. If you don't mind, before we get to that item, mm-hmm. I just wanted everybody to understand that we do have an appointment by Councilman Waters, Mike McGee. That's been recommended from the Community Development Commission. So everybody would know that. I didn't know if anybody else had any other appointments that they wanted to make. Okay, well, this will be.
I have some.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
That's the one that I did the last time, correct? Right. And this would be for the next time, right? I'd like to reappoint Rosalind McDuffie to the Design Review Board. I would like to reappoint Catherine Shirley to the Park Commission, and I would like to reappoint Dacre Stoker to the Environmental Committee.
Okay. Are there any others for this time?
Okay, these are all on the November 26th agenda.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'm sorry. Let me go ahead and I'll read this by title only. It's ordinance amending the zoning of real estate owned by Roderick Busby from residential single family RS6 to limited business. When council had the task force, this is the Old Aiken task force, look at the entire Old Aiken area, which stretched from Hampton on the north, Buford Street on the east, on the south was Carlton Avenue, and then on the west was approximately where Morgan Street comes in. One of the recommendations they had was that at the end of each of the north-south streets at Richland and at Park, that those areas could remain limited business or general business, and then in between to zone the rest of those general business. That was the recommendation. That's what's in the comprehensive plan that City Council did approve. This individual has the property. It's currently RS6, and he would like to have it rezoned to general business, which is what he has next to him. The Planning Commission unanimously approved this at their meeting, and that this would, the only condition they had, that the sale of property, the contract purchase would be completed within 180 days, or the rezoning would become null and void. Council approved this on the first reading on October 22nd. This is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to rezone property at 616 Park Avenue, southeast from RS6 to single family to LB limited business.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading public hearing. If there's anyone in the audience who would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move that we have a question regarding it before I make a motion. I will entertain a motion for someone else before I do that. But you're waiting, Mr. No, I don't want to.
Okay, you're not making a motion.
No way.
Okay, do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I'll move for approval so we can get the discussion going. Okay. I'll move for approval of this on second reading and public hearing.
All right, I'll second it. All right, any discussion?
I want to hear what Leslie's question is.
My concern is we've got a residential area that we're placing a business here, and I know that it indicated that it's on a small scale, but we're returning a residential area into a business area. That's my concern here.
Is this map shows us this? There's just this one lot that's RS6 in the entire block.
The other lot that's next to it is already zoned GB.
The
rest of the block is GB. Again, when council approved the Old Lincoln Master Plan, you stated that general business or limited professional type of businesses facing Richland or Park was something that you had no problem with, but you would like to see, as you can see from the zoning map, the properties in between those two areas return to residential. So that was the outlook that you were aiming towards when you approved the Old Lincoln Master Plan. So it really fits into the decision that council made earlier and is compatible with the comprehensive plan by rezoning to GB.
This is the house that was a law office. I'm not incorrect about that, am I?
That is correct.
And there's no question that the house is going to stay there.
Well, there's an RS-8 right across the street, and right across from there is where the general business is from what I'm looking at here.
That is correct. The right across the street is zoned RS-8. But you can see 95% of that area is zoned general business right now, even though there are a number of residential houses in there.
Well, everything on the northeast side of that block is residential.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And the idea is to eventually get that zoned to be residential at some point in time to match up with what the houses are, except again, the Old Lincoln Master Plan said those properties facing Richland or Park Avenue could remain general business or some type of professional business.
Well, my only concern is that as we look at areas and we change it from residential to general business, I remember very well with Hain Avenue when we started with a few businesses wanted to come in to change it into professional or to general business. And if we had started that pattern on Hain Avenue, we probably would have started from the west part of town headed into the east part of town if we had just started that pattern.
If council decides that they do not want to rezone this, then I would recommend you go back to the Planning Commission, because the Planning Commission voted unanimously to approve it for rezoning based upon a decision council made in April of 2005 to allow general business and to allow professional businesses to be on Park Avenue and to be on Richland. So it's right now that they need to know which direction council wants to go. Again, I think they'll comply with whatever direction you want, but they were just going based on what you had approved for the PC.
I personally see no problem with the decision.
I have no problem with that.
I think
this is not in a district, though, of any sort. Not in an overlay district. Well, we don't have an overlay district.
Not at this point in time. If you recall, about 6 or 8 weeks ago, we had recommended this area being under an overlay district, and a number of citizens came forward, and for that reason, planning department and planning commission will be looking at making modifications to that, basically coming back, I believe, saying that that will only apply to new structures or structures that are going to be renovated over 50% of the value of the property. But right now there is no overlay in this particular area. But there will be, I would say, within the next 3 to 6 months.
Does anyone know what kind of business is intended to come here?
He talks about it.
Mr. Busby is.
Oh, Ms. Busby, would you like to talk to us about it?
Yeah.
Please.
Yes, I'm Roddy Busby. I own the property on Park. I came to y'all a couple of years ago and had this. It was already a general business, and the lots next door are general business. It's next door to the Salvation Army, mm-hmm. and two lots which are general business. I was approached by a buyer that wants to open up a sandwich shop, coffee, tea room type thing. And in the market in that area, the residential market is just gone, so I was just trying to put it back in the market as a light business, either to a lawyer's office or small businesses. You know, it's not going to be a mainstream rent or anything like that. And I don't see what effect it would have on the residents. The house is going to remain intact as it is. And if it was ever modified, it would be up to council or planning and zoning to authorize it. So that was my purpose. And the buyers, I don't think they're here tonight. But that was what we're trying to do. Just get it back to their light business, lawyer's office, or like a sandwich shop or something like that.
Okay. And Mr. Busby, you say will remain
the house will remain intact. It cannot be changed unless it goes to planning zoning.
I think it doesn't meet the setback and it's grandfathered in, so if you do anything with it, you really do have to go back. Is that not right?
That's correct.
That's right. So it has to stay like it is. I personally don't have a problem with a small business going in there. My concern is when we start getting into other types of businesses, and once we zone it general business, it does open itself up for something else. But as it stands now, I really don't see how this could be, for fear of eating those words later on, too much of a detriment.
I'm not familiar with the city's stages of general. I think this is a stage below general business.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Right.
So it's really, actually, it's going back under, it's probably less of a detriment now than it would have been before.
I think, there are times when we need to advocate for smaller businesses going into residential areas so people don't have to go so far to get some of the things they need. Now, I don't know if a sandwich counts, but certainly it can't hurt very much to not have to drive 2 miles to get a sandwich, or walk a few extra blocks might not hurt either.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Busby. Does anyone else want to speak on this issue? If not, it's back to council. And any other comments by council? If not, your hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Opposed?
Opposed? Oh, I'm sorry.
All in favor?
I started here.
Okay. Opposed? Okay. Okay. Passes 5-1. Item 2 is the second reading of public hearing of ordinance to amend the traffic management ordinance. Mr. Duplitz.
Yes, I'll write and do this by title only. It's ordinance amending Section 11 of the Aiken City Code. A few years ago, City Council approved the traffic management ordinance. Again, it's like so many other ordinances that you approve. After you work that ordinance for a few years, you see some very positive things. You also see some things that might want to be changed a little bit to make it even better. The this was one of the action agenda items. The Planning Commission reviewed this, and they approved this coming to you on a 6-1 vote. The only dissenting vote appeared from an individual who actually wanted to make the area larger when we do traffic studies in relationship to the project that's being developed. A couple of major changes is expanding the study area from 1/4 mile to 1/2 mile, depending on the amount of traffic that's generated in comparison to the road that it fronts. It also has in here that stated that whatever property is annexed or rezoned, that piece of property will base the traffic study on the amount of traffic that particular site could generate. In other words, recently we had McDonald's on Richland Avenue, we had the Walgreens on Whiskey Road, that they came and said, well, it's going to be a Walgreens, it's going to be a McDonald's. Although it's coming in the city as a general business, and the traffic could maybe be 2 or 3 times larger if it was a convenience store, we're asking that our study be based on the fact that it's going to be a Walgreens McDonald's. In this particular ordinance, that is being stated that would no longer be allowed. And then at the last meeting, you also stated that you wanted to remove the waiver section, which has been removed. So for your consideration, this is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the existing traffic management ordinance.
Thank you, sir. This is the second reading public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone who would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. Do we have a motion and second?
Some move, Mr. Mayor, that we adopt this ordinance to amend the traffic management ordinance.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we have a second. Okay, any discussion?
I would like to make sure that I heard correctly. It is as written here, and that we are removing the clause that the study could be downgraded. That's still up. It's not in the right. It's not in.
Although it shows it's in here, you have asked that be removed. That section will be removed.
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Mayor, if I may, one problem that I have with this on small businesses, and that is if a dry cleaners wanted to locate or rezone a piece of property, what we're telling that, and this could be a family-owned business, that could possibly generate 40, 50 trips per day. But what we're telling them under this current ordinance is that we're going to base your traffic study on this being a convenience store here, if one would fit on that piece of property. I think that's unfair to that business. I do think that there's probably been instances within our city where someone has been deceptive about what they were going to open. I think that's probably been the exception more so than the rule. Personally, I think, you know, this is going to trigger a tremendous amount of expense to some small businesses. I don't have a problem on some of the larger businesses that would like to locate within our city to have them do things equally as expensive or costly as some of the other cities. However, I do think that this community is based on small businesses, and I would like to see the small businessman protected from this standpoint. I think if we're going to address this, possibly a much better way to make sure that small piece of property is going to become that dry cleaners that he says it is for us to reduce the size of a planned commercial to potentially a half acre. Then if they were to change that in any time, they would have to come back before us and reveal to us exactly what their plans were at that time, as opposed to going forward and making everyone go through the hoops of a traffic management study that a convenience store would have to. You know that, and I know that a dry cleaners is not going to generate that type of traffic. Neither would a paint store generate that type of traffic, and I don't think we need to make everyone go through that, knowing good and well that it's going to be a different business on that piece of property.
I think that's a good point.
It is.
And one of the problems we have with a lot of our zoning is that we so many different things, if you will, are lumped into certain zones. And we've seen this time and time again, too, that you just don't know. As you say, there could be something else there that would generate a lot more traffic. Mm-hmm. It could be a tall building, right? It doesn't even have to be one story. It could be a tall building that would somebody could move in and take that cleaners and, you know, demolish it and put something else on up there.
Yes.
That's what concerns me.
But if it were to come in under a planned commercial, they could not do anything other than what they have said with that piece of property. If they were to change the use of that piece of property, they would have to come back before City Council.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you there. We'd have to change that ordinance to make it a half acre, even less.
Yes.
I mean,
but we don't even on planned commercial, do we say it has to be this kind of business?
For a planned commercial, we would have to come in with renderings.
Mm-hmm.
And
of the exteriors.
Of what the exterior. So if they said, we plan to put McDonald's here, and they show us exterior drawings of McDonald's, and then all of a sudden they decide to change that to a convenience gas station, then they would have to come back in with a change of what they were anticipating doing at that project, at which time the council would then say, okay, we'll approve these, but you will have to go ahead and beef up your traffic study to consider these other things.
But what if the exterior looks the same?
It couldn't.
Well, it possibly could.
It could. Yes.
I mean, it possibly could.
Is there a McDonald's?
And if we're going to do this, we may have
to
revisit.
The only two kind of businesses.
If we're going to do this, then we may have to revisit the planned commercial ordinance, which, number one, talks about much larger acreage. But if you want to do that, then we could cover just what you're saying within that if the change in scope or use of the property would justify it, then the council could request additional traffic information to meet with current ordinance.
Which is the paragraph or the paragraphs that really bother you, Don?
That was the one where we're asking that the provision which was not part of the original ordinance be deleted. Therefore, each site would be based on the maximum number of trips that could be generated.
What page, Don?
On that property.
What page?
That problem page.
Now, that was just Rogers.
There's nothing in this ordinance that specifically states one way or the other. What happened was projects came to you on several different occasions, and again, the most recent I can think of is Walgreens and McDonald's. And when they came to you requesting annexation of those properties, they also said, and we would like you to allow us to limit the number of trips per day based on what we are proposing at that particular location, i.e. McDonald's, i.e. Walgreens. Versus if you had not allowed that to happen, they would have been based on the worst case scenario. Instead of maybe 1,000 trips per day, it might have been based on 3,000 trips per day. 3,000 trips per day would then put you in another category depending on the amount of traffic currently on that roadway, and would expand the area that you would study and expand a number of other parameters that you'd be looking at in your traffic study. I'll give you an example. Walgreens, because you said Walgreens was able to build on that site based on the traffic that a Walgreens would generate. We looked at the traffic that was currently being generated on that site at Doherty Road and Whiskey Road, compared it to what Walgreens was going to generate, and there really was no substantial difference, and therefore their study was very simplified. Now, if we would have based it on, say, a convenience store there, which might be three times the amount of traffic, they would have had to have had a much more substantial traffic study looking at a much larger area on Whiskey Road and on Durham Road within our study parameters.
But as it is, to use the example that Don mentions here, 50 trips a day for dry cleaners, if someone comes to us and wants a rezoning, and they come and ask for a dry cleaners on a given street, if it only is going to generate 50 trips a day, I don't even see that it requires a traffic study, would it not? Would it not?
No, but what we're going to be doing, if dry cleaners came to us and said, I would like to build on Whiskey Road and annex in the city, we'd be basing it, according to the new orders here that you had before you, we'd be basing it on the worst case scenario, not on the dry cleaners.
Yes. So that's what I think is unfair about it.
So it could be anything. Of course, we almost never get on Whiskey Road a quarter acre or a half acre annexation request. I mean, it's usually considerably larger. So I'm a little concerned about that.
I think it's a good
because you can't enforce what we, so the way we have it doesn't work. Changing, going down on the PC, I think we've already discussed that several times and rejected that, so I don't see that really as a solution.
What are they
getting these restrictive covenants? Or have we had any situation where someone, you know what I'm saying, where just what he's talking about, perhaps has happened and we required the filing of a restrictive covenant, as this eliminated portion talks about?
It is very difficult when you put conditions on a rezoning or an annexation to track that with that property for any type of long-term period of time.
Then let's ask, in the case of an annexation, we doing those, we say, as a matter of course, as PC, but in this very special kind of circumstance, could that be something like limited business in that area if it's less than a GB? What uses are allowed in limited business? We just talked about those.
Ed, can you address that for us, please?
Now, one of the things that council could look at doing, it seems like there's a fairly good consensus on council that we change our parameters on PC.
I think so.
That we look at that. And if that's the case, and you still want to go forward with this ordinance, instead of delaying the ordinance, we could just remove that one section for right now and allow some waivers. In the meantime, we could go ahead and review the PC regulations. And when we get to that part, we could go ahead and incorporate that language and other things within it to reflect what we want here. Because I think the consensus is we want to go forward with the changes on the traffic management ordinance, but this one is disconcerting to that small business person. And the difference would be a couple of things. One, the study itself. If you require that small business to go to a larger study and intensify that study as to what they have to look at, actually go out there to manual accounts, it could go from a few thousand dollars to several tens of thousands of dollars. So you could look at it, is that a big burden or is that not a big burden? Certainly for a small business, it could be a big burden. Going from saying, we just want you to do a small study to look at this based on your traffic volume, and it's $2,000 to $5,000, versus we send some studies come to us which probably cost $30,000 to $50,000.
The thing that I'm concerned with is, wouldn't it almost be harder to keep track of what uses you had allowed in a planned commercial than a restrictive covenant that was attached to the deed?
Well, when they would come to us with a building permit, you know, we would take that building permit and compare it to what was approved by City Council on the renderings and the plans, the site plan drawing, and make sure that what's on the site plan drawing that you approve is substantially the same as what they're planning on building. And that's one of the things that Ed does all the time.
Yeah, Go ahead. That doesn't solve the problem.
Before I try to address your question, you may have to restate it, but to go back to Mr. Wells's question or comment, if you have an existing business like a dry cleaners and somebody comes in and wants to do something different, the determination of whether a study is needed is based on the additional traffic. You don't go back to ground zero and start over again and compute it. You know, you take the excess traffic that would be generated and decide if a study is needed, if that makes any sense.
That's in changing of a business, current business. But, you know, my concern is if a small business wants to annex a piece of property into the city, what we're telling them now is whatever business that could locate there that was going to generate the most traffic is what we're going to base your traffic study on. We're going to throw what you're going to use in that place out of the window, and we're going to tell you that whatever business that could locate there that would generate the absolute most traffic, that's what this study has to be done on. And when we evaluate these intersections, your portion of that is going to be the maximum amount of traffic that place generates is what you're going to have to pay for over and above, even though it has nothing to do with the business that's located there.
But if I may, in this particular instance of the small business, what my question was whether there would be a limited business category instead of taking that quarter or half acre. Well, I know we couldn't take it in as planned commercial in any event, so zoning it LD, would that give us a limitation that GB would not go commercial? Yes?
I suppose you could take that approach. I mean, you'd still have to assume the most intense use that would be allowed in whatever the zone is.
Right. I'm saying that what are the types of businesses that can go into this RV?
I'd have to get the zoning ordinance to read it to you.
For instance, like dry cleaners or something.
I don't think a dry cleaner is allowed in LB. They'd have to be general business. LB allows less intense uses than general business. Mm-hmm. Now, again, to give you a list, I could do that. But one other point of clarification, and the provision that involves restrictive covenants that you've been talking about, the intent of that, when it was added 2 years ago, was to not allow you to do a less intense study. It was to get you off the hook totally of doing a study, because you commit that the traffic to be generated would be kept at a certain level, and you record a restrictive covenant saying the trips are never going to be above this level, and that level would be below the level required to trigger a study. So the intent was, again, to get you off the hook on doing a study at all.
And then that would be filed in your office, it says here.
Well, it's filed with the RMC office. But
well, it also says, it says in a manner that's, let's see, and provide proof of filing to the planning director before the annexation or rezoning is complete. So that should be in a file in our planning office regarding that property.
The filing, again, refers to RMC. Yes, you should have it. We should have it in a file in the planning department. The problem is going to be long-term keeping track of that. You know, 15 years from now, will somebody know that that is there?
Well, I just wonder if it's going to be any easier to keep track of what kind of businesses we approved in a general, in a planned commercial, you know, whether we approved of whatever we approved.
If it's planned commercial, it is an automatic trigger that there is a concept plan for that might have conditions attached. So you see planned commercial or planned residential, you know to go to the file and check it out. If it's just general business, you may not know that. There may be no trigger to cause you to go look that up and know that there is a restriction.
Have a page listing all this? I don't know.
Let's talk about changing that from 5 acres. I think that's what it is now for commercial. Is that right, Ian?
BC is not.
BC? Like 5 acres. What would we like it to be? What would catch most everything? It seems to me it's that the more we know it, the more work it's going to be. I know about it.
because it means you can have more conceptual drawings, planning, as well as city council.
But I think
it's right, though, even though it's more work. We're getting a better product, it seems to me. Don, we get out of the situation that you're talking about, which I think is unfair. You want to put in small business, and you gotta have a traffic study on the largest possible thing that could go on that piece of property, and that doesn't sound fair.
Again, that may not solve the problem, because if they bring in a plain commercial concept plan and it shows retail on an out parcel, if they don't say dry cleaner or fast food, we have to assume that it's a convenience store or whatever's going to generate the most traffic. So they've got to be very specific on that concept plan, or that will not help.
Well, let's get more specific then. What does it take to get more specific?
Again, if they're not specific, then we go ahead and we do figure it's going to be that
on that
worst case scenario.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only other way that we could help the situation out would be putting a limitation saying that they have to get a building permit within X number of days after council approves it for those conditions. Otherwise, a full study would have to be concluded. So in other words, if that dry cleaner said that I'm going to build at a certain site, and you give them 6 months to go ahead and get a building permit, if they don't get a building permit within 6 months, then they have to do the full study. Whoever then decides to build there. But you either put some limitation on it, or, and I think looking at both those situations works well. You could go to a PC and lower it down. I think that will help. I'm not too sure if you're ever going to get something that's going to be 100% what you want in every case. But if you lower the PC down to a lesser acreage and you put some kind of limitation, you will probably get the vast majority of these situations.
But I don't see why we can't have a file of restrictive covenants that deal with traffic studies. And I mean, I don't see how that can be that complicated. And we keep a record of those restrictive covenants that have been related to properties that haven't had to do traffic studies because of them. I mean,
let me give you a little situation. Right across the street here, on the corner where the pizza place is going, that was a former auto repair, whatever type.
And gas station, you heard that.
So, just the real situation there. The traffic volume is already there. How would you handle that small business across the street with the pizza place going there?
Right. You'd look at, would any additional trips be generated? I mean, if the muffler place generated 3,000 trips, the pizza place generates 4,000 trips, you base it on the additional 1,000 trips. And
okay,
if that doesn't trigger a study, they don't do one.
But my argument would be that traffic flow is already there. I mean, you look at the traffic generated in this area.
Now, if that were an annexation, let's say a small quarter acre lot, half acre lot on Whiskey, some local dry cleaner wants to open a branch store. Now, they're seeking annexation on that half acre lot. Okay, now what we're saying to them, according to this ordinance, is, you know, you could possibly put a convenience store on that property. So now you've got to do and pay for a study, just as if you were going to open a convenience store there and generate that much traffic, even though we know you're not, because potentially that's what you could do. I mean, I'm in agreement with let's doing something, but that's too much for a small business to bite off. I mean, we don't even guarantee in these people that they're going to be successful there.
So you're suggesting that we just not eliminate all that information on page 3. Is that it?
That would be my suggestion, Jane, until we work out some better method to make sure that what's fair is fair. And I certainly don't want to penalize small businesses in the city of Aiken.
What we have done in the past is we've allowed exceptions. People would come and say, you know, let's base it on what we're going to build here, not what is in the ordinance. All this was saying was that we're saying, let's just go back and interpret the ordinance that you build to the maximum. And what
Councilmember Wells is saying is we need to find ways to, when they're planning on coming in with a certain type of business, to allow that to be an exception.
In other words, what we're talking about is putting back in the waiver, putting back in some way that someone can make a discretion.
One way you could do it is putting back the waiver.
Is that not what the Planning Commission itself passed? Is this with the waiver in it? And maybe thinking ahead that it might be a problem if we didn't have something in there to guard against hurting small businesses.
Again, originally that provision was not in there when you adopted the ordinance 3 years ago. It was added in the spring of 2005, and I forget the case that prompted it, but again, the problem has been concerned about tracking it long term. Yes, we can have a file in the office, yeah. Put that in there. It's just not foolproof. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make. 15, 20, 40 years from now, you may not pick up on that.
I would insist that you ought to be able to find a way to track it. This day, the computer, the properties don't even print. There ought to be a searchable.
And today, I think we would catch it. I'm just telling you, long term, it's not foolproof. That's the only point.
Right? I'd be perfectly happy with it staying in there if we had reasonable assurances that I just can't see that we cannot track that. If we can track planned commercial, we surely can do that. I don't see the difference. And furthermore, I think we're arguing something that not ever going to be that many of them. So I haven't built them, and no, it hasn't.
I think we could leave this in as long as we have the restrictive covenant, and I think we could make an effort to file the restrictive covenant in a file that is related to the traffic ordinance and make an effort to be sure that it's not violated. I think that'd be easier to track than fooling around playing commercial all different ways.
So we're leaving, the suggestion is to leave 42-179, page 3 in. Now strike all that.
Right.
Ed? Are you uneasy?
Don, that's what you're suggesting, is it not?
Okay, 42-179.
Seven.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
I still have more things to say about it.
If we come up with a way, Dick, that's going to be fair to small businesses, then I'm all in favor of it.
Yeah.
But right now, I think that's going to hurt small business, and I cannot.
I agree. I think if we kind of get our computer system up to speed, we got to be able to track properties that we've approved in the past.
How many have we had in the past that you can remember?
Four. In 4 years?
Yeah.
In a couple of years.
Just thinking through.
This was 05 that the modification was made. Yeah. For the last 2 years, we had about four. So it might have been 573, but
yeah. But still, so history tells us it's not too many if it continues the way it's been. Not too many to try to follow.
And if it does, we'll revisit. But somebody's going to propose at some point to remove this.
Well, so, I was going to amend my motion. Yes, I made a motion. Beverly seconded, and I was going to amend the motion to I'm going to withdraw my second.
I'll just get my
motion. I'm going to withdraw my second.
Okay, you're going to withdraw your second.
And someone else can second it.
Let's hear what Dick has to say.
Well, I registered my problem with the idea that we still haven't gone to what was recommended in the first traffic management ordinance, which is that it's 1 mile, 2 miles, where the proposed that we dealt with at the beginning, that we ended up cutting back to the 1/4 mile, and now we're going to the 1/2 mile, and I really believe we're still trying to solve a problem half-heartedly at best. We really need to go the distance, I think. Now, the point was made last time, I don't know if the note is in here, I think it is still, that if we did a project somewhere around the ball, it could be over the amount that would trigger a large study, but it still wouldn't get as far as Pine Log and Whiskey Road. And so that's the problem, that's the traffic, and I really believe that we need a larger study area for those big projects.
Anybody have any other thoughts about that? Planning apparently saw fit to pass it 6-1. Is that right?
But not like we're discussing it now. We're taking it.
At which point, though?
I think.
They didn't. They agreed with the way.
I think it was confusion.
I just think any time we have this much. You have to look at how you tweak it to make sure it fits. I just feel like the ordinary citizen whose mind is bent on trying to open a small business would have to find his way through what to do about all these different situations that we're putting forth here. It's difficult at best to understand what it is we're really trying to do here. Planning Commission sees it one way, and we're trying to tweak it another way, and yet we say it's not going far enough. We should be going, 2 miles instead of the half mile?
But that's only for big projects with many trips. They probably go
I would be hard pressed to believe that we're going to get a whole lot of annexation on Whiskey Road with this with what we're doing here. That's just the way I feel about it. But I just think that if we listen to ourselves, we realize that we're about to pass something that really needs to be worked on. You fix one thing, but you create another difficulty for somebody else. And so we'll be back a little later on to try to fix that.
Beverly, are you addressing the size of the study for
I'm addressing the size, how far you want to go with the traffic study for what's not in here and what we may be doing to small businesses. Just seems like.
But small businesses aren't going to be affected by that study area.
No, not by that one, but they are affected by what Don has brought up. And then you're saying that the big businesses aren't included enough, I mean, that we should be studying further for them. Are we ready to pass this?
Well, I think that Don indicated that he would like the provision reinstated that was scrapped on page 342-179-7. We've reinstated that. To think that we're going to pass a perfect ordinance the first time, It's not going to happen.
It's not our first time on this one, is it?
Or the second time. Anything that we do is open for reconsideration based on times and changes that takes place.
Well, that's right. The news has been started on this traffic management ordinance actually six and a half years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It got passed roughly 4 years ago. We filled with this little waiver in since then, and it was not done really very much to stop either growth or traffic. It hasn't really given us that much of a tool, is what I'm saying. And I don't think just going this little bit more is going to do anything. We're passing something that gives the idea that we're managing, but we are not managing.
So is the intent to stop growth? That's what you're saying? What's the intent?
To manage it.
Manage it, okay.
To make sure, and for instance, so many times you're waiting some sort of things about, let's get those guys to go over to the north side. This might help a little bit in that respect, I don't know, but it would certainly direct it in a way that we aren't doing now and have barely succeeded, although I would want you, we have the nice big one outside. Could have some traffic problems there, so.
Well, I don't think we're going to complain right away about that.
It's a present problem.
Dick, my husband, I must, speaking of Walmart, not to get off the beat past the subject, my husband went to Walmart 7 days in a row when it first opened. And that would have meant seven days in a row, south side of town, with gasoline being used. So he's very happy to see the Walmart on the west side of town.
I wonder who was causing all that traffic in that
neighborhood. So we've got a temporary respite. If the study shows that, then we have no problem.
Okay, where do we stand on the issue that Dick, we've heard that, and yeah. Council's got to decide what they want to do on that. If you're finished, where do we stand on what Don is talking about, which I personally think is very legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do we think that we can, based on past history, we only have a few of these with the restrictive covenant aspect? I don't know why we can't continue on that.
I'm thinking with that. Yeah. The covenants.
And see, at least for a while, and see how many of these we're going to have. Would that satisfy your concern, Don?
Absolutely.
For a small business? And then at some point, where we, if it's given our hand, we need to change it, we can go back.
And make every effort to keep these in the file so that we can look them up.
Yeah. And it's only four or so right now. Nick, I mean, Ed, I understand what you're saying. We can't say for sure what's going to happen in 10, 20 years. But if everything works well with technology, it ought to be a simple process, fairly simple, I would think, if it continues to go in that way and gets even better. Right? I mean, if it does. Okay.
Jane, what did you do with your
part?
What did you do? Did you second that, or did you?
Yes, I seconded it.
Okay.
Including that phrase about the covenants.
Okay.
Of many phrases about the covenants.
Okay, so we've got a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
So you're not adding anything to it, am I right, Dick? You're just complaining, not going far enough, is that right?
Okay.
All in favor, show of hands, please.
Okay.
Passes. Okay. Oppose? No, you didn't oppose.
No, sir, I didn't. Oh,
okay, so passes. Passes 5-1. Okay.
Did you get all that?
Excuse me. Item 3, second reading public hearing of ordinance to establish a new millage rate. Excuse me.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to amend the millage rate for fiscal year beginning July 1, 2007. Hopefully, within the next few weeks, we'll be receiving the tax digest from the county with all the information that we'll need. We will then go ahead and prepare our tax bills to send out, and we need to determine what the new millage will be based on the reassessment of the property that was completed this past year. This was done about 6 years ago. At that time, we were at 77 mills. We reduced it down to 71 mills. That was prior to the time when the state went ahead and restricted the amount of percentage that anybody's residential property that they live in could go up, and they put a 15% maximum the reassessment on any property. So that means that if a particular house was assessed in 2000 at 100,000, and based on property values going up in Aiken, it's now valued at 175,000. The most it could go up is 115,000. It would go up to $15,000. Because of that, we are not going to be receiving as much as we would have in the past, because
there's a limitation on the maximum amount that we could get in based upon the new state law. So the last time we went down to 6 mills reduction, we were still recommending a fairly decent reduction of millage based on our growth and based on what we feel will be coming in. And so we are recommending to you that we reduce our millage from 71 mills down to 66 mills. We feel with that approval, we would not have to have a rate increase for our garbage because the additional funding coming in with this should go ahead and cover the any increase that we may need in solid waste fees for a few more years to come. So for your approval tonight, this is second reading and public hearing ordinance to roll back our mill from 71 mills to 66 mills in accordance with the state law.
Thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. If there's anyone like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve this in second reading.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Second. Any discussion? It's going in the right direction. Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passage unanimously. New business, first reading of an ordinance accepting the fiscal year 2006-2007 audited financial statements. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance accepting the fiscal year 2006-2007 audited financial statements and authorizing the variances to the fiscal year 2006-2007 budget ordinance. In the past, we have gotten our audit report and you've accepted it. What we're doing here now is to reconcile the budget that you approved approximately a year and a half ago. They have reconciled every single account as to what was actually budgeted versus what was spent, and that's income and expenses. So we're actually approving with this tonight as reconciliation of the budget that you approved for 2006-2007. They are here tonight to answer any questions. What I understand is it was a very good audit as far as they could not find anything where we were doing anything wrong, and our financial condition is in very good shape. And I'll let them tell you that, but let me just read this. This is the first reading ordinance to approve the city fiscal year 2006-2007 financial statement, and upon your consideration, a second reading public hearing would be held. And I'd like to have Lynn come up with her auditors and have them go over anything and answer any questions you may have concerning this year's audit.
Thank you. We did have a good year this year, but as I look back, so I look back, we always have a good year. So tonight, I have Laurie Smith. She's the shareholder with Elliot Davis. And I believe Daniel, he is Daniel Mullinex. He will be presenting the audit summary to you. And I'd like to say thank you to our auditors for the outstanding work that they have accomplished this year.
Well, it's good to be here. As you know, my job title is as an auditor. It's great. People ask what you do. I'm an auditor. Sometimes people get a cringe. But we do enjoy coming to the City of Aiken, doing your audit. Roger's team, and Anita and Kim do a great job. At most times when we ask for documentation, it's easily provided. Sometimes we'll go to clients and that's not the case. But this year it was a good audit. Our team enjoyed working with her finance department. I was just going to do a brief summary of the financial statement with the report. Hopefully you have it. If you go to page 1, which says Elliot Davis at the bottom, it does not have page number. It's got the Elliot Davis letterhead. This is our opinion. We audited in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards. We have issued an unqualified opinion, which means we haven't found any issues with your financials. It's a clean opinion, and that's what the first page and a half in accounting language means. If you go to page six, this is part of the MD&A section that Anita and Kim helped draft. Your total net assets for the city increased 7.6%, as you can tell in the figure two at the top. That's your annual growth of your net assets with the city, so you're not growing too large or you're not shrinking. It's not good sometimes when you see a government, their assets start shrinking. Either it could be issues with that, but in your case, your net assets have increased during the year. If you refer to the graphs on page 7, the colorful graphs, they really, if you took last year's report and dropped it next to it and compared the makeup, your expenses with the county, with dividing between the general government function, your public safety, public works, and so on, hasn't really changed. Your makeup of where you spend your money is almost exact. Like general government last year was 11.73%. This year it's 11.74%. So you really don't have a change in your expenditures. Now, your government-wide revenues at the top, there was a change. And in the prior year, your capital project sales tax money, that year you didn't receive any money because you were going to your capital sales project 2 fund. But this year you received received money about approximately $3.2 million. You collected your sales tax 2 fund, and also you collected $2.3 million of excess contributions that was allocated out to all the to all the governments that was not even projected. It was extra cash that the city has gotten. So as you can see on page 7, your capital sales tax revenues this year was almost close to 12% of your total revenues for the year, whereas last year that was zero. So that is your major change from last year to this year. If you look for your financials, let's see. If you turn to page 8, this is on figure 3. This is a summary. It divides your government activities, which is your general fund, everything except your water and sewer and stormwater fund. As you can see, increase in the governmental fund went from $1.3 million in the last year to $6.4 million this year. And if you go up the line to your capital project sales tax, there's your $5.5 million. So that's why there was such a change from the prior year. It's not going to change that. I predict it won't change dramatically like that, because this was an additional amount of revenue. But that was one item that changed more. Your business type activities, there was a it went from about $1 million to $2.7 million. Really not much of a change than the year before. Most of it was the capital. If you look at line 3, capital grants and contributions, it went from $330,000 to $1,528,000. That number there represents a contribution from developers for pipeline. You had about, last year you didn't, 2 years ago, you didn't really have as much pipeline. This year you had over 77,000 feet of pipeline that the city now owns as part of the development. So that value is part of the city now on their assets. So that's why you see an increase from $1 million to 2.7. That's the main reason for that increase. those two items really are what caused your changes from the prior year. If you go to page, let's see, 18, this is a summary. It breaks down your governmental funds. The way it's categorized on the governmental funds is it's the major funds, and then this other column says other governmental funds is all the small funds, because they don't want to have this long report with 60 funds. So your general fund is really what council members really hone in on, because that's your mainly your daily operations. And as you can see, you increased the fund balance by $1 million overall in just the general fund. So I don't see the city's doing pretty well with its monies. It's not overspending, or it's really not underspending. If you look at the graphs that were handed out to you, it's three pages. This is a synopsis of going back to 2001. Kind of gives you a picture, if you like pictures, of how well the city's doing. As you can tell, it goes from 2007 to the far left, and 2001 to the far right. So you can see in most cases, there's an increase. And that's also due to growth of the city. If you look at the first graph, it's called general fund cash and short-term investments. If you turn to page 16, that graph there represents your equity and pooled cash of $12.2 million on the top left-hand corner on page 16. So last year it was 11.2, the year before about 11.2. So your cash reserves have slowly increased a little bit, but there's not been a dramatic increase. But you can tell in the graph how things are going with your cash. I'd like to drop down to the bottom schedule. This is general fund number of days of operating cash reserves. This graph kind of represents. Let's see. All right, I'll just do this one first. This graph really represents. It takes your total expenditures for the next year in your general fund. So you spend about, this year you spend about $25 million on your general fund. What it's doing, it's saying you have approximately half a year, 186 days, that if, let's say, the city couldn't collect monies, that you'd be okay for around 6 months. And the rule of thumb is 3 to 6 months. We see some counties, municipalities, they'll be there for 15 days. Now, that's not good. Or you see 3 months or 7 months. So 6 months, that's a good a good number of days to be able to have a general fund to if something happens in the United States or the city, that you would be able to have the resources to do what you needed to do. Let's see. These other graphs you can look at, take it home tonight and show your spouse. But the bottom on the page 2, general fund revenue and expenses. This kind of shows that, in general, your revenues were, like we were talking about $900,000 over your expenditures. But you can tell going back to 2001, some years, 2001, 2002, your expenditures were more in revenues. But in the past 5 years, they've been kind of neck to neck. So that means you've been budgeting pretty close to your revenues, which is a good thing. Let's see. Page 3 in the graphs. Turn to page 3 in the graphs. And then page 21. This is your water and sewer fund and your stormwater fund. This one here, really, there's not much change from the prior year. Your revenues have been increasing since I know we've been doing the audit, and that's mainly you have more customers. Your fee, you have a fee hike a little bit every year, but we see most of the time that relates to usage. So we haven't found any issues with the water and sewer system or stormwater fund. And the page 3 graph, the same thing like the governmental you see the over, you see your revenues in blue and your expenses in red. But you had this past year an 8.4% increase in water consumption. Either one person's very thirsty or people more watering their yard, either get their lawns. So the last thing I wanted to mention, two things. Page 23, the fiduciary net assets. These are monies held for three different things. You have your pension money. You have a new fund that was set up for post-retirement benefit trust of $300,000, and then your fireman's agency fund of $100,000+. The pension trust fund, last year was about $16 million. This year is about $18.6 million. If you turn to page 24, it shows you why it went from $15.9 million to $18.6 million. The majority of it is your employer contribution was $918. This is pretty much what you've been paying in each year, little bit increases or decreases. But your appreciation and your assets on your pension trust fund is a pretty good amount. It's about 20%. I wish I could get 20% on investment. So you did very well on your appreciation, which in turn saves the city money. So you always want that number to go up. The new fund this year, this wasn't here last year, is the post-retirement benefit trust fund. At the end of the year, the second day, June 29th, they wrote a check for the $300,000. This is to start funding for OPEB, which is a GASB 45. It's part of post-retirement benefits for health benefits for retirees. This doesn't really go in effect till 2009, but per Anita's direction and council approving it, you're starting to fund it. I read today, kind of shocked. I grew up in Maryland, and most time I don't see. Don't think I peruse the internet too much during the day, but I was looking up OPEB, I try to do research about an hour a day just to learn new things. And I saw Maryland projected that if they take all of their municipalities in Maryland, that their cost is $40 billion, is what their liability, they're estimating it to be for just that one state. So I commend the city to start taking years before to build a reserve to start funding this instead of two weeks ago we were in Florida at the GASB update and we had the GASB board members there and one man stood up and said, you're going to bankrupt us. They're going to start taking away our health care benefits. And the idea was, well, they really need to see how much this stuff really costs. So it's better to see now instead of waiting 8 years and somebody retires expecting benefits to know, yes, we're going to provide them or no, we're not. So that was the main push for this GASB 45. So on page 24, that's a contribution, $300,000. And in one day, you made $120. So the last thing, which some people do not like to audit, and I don't mind as much when I first started, but is your single audit, your federal funds. The pages 105 through 108 is your opinions really for federal expenditures. We issue two reports. We issue a GAS audit report, meaning you're following government auditing standards. There was no exceptions on that. And then page 107 is a compliance letter for OMB Circular 8A133, which is just a federal law of what you have to follow. And we issued an unqualified opinion on that. On page 109, that lists your federal expenditures. Last year you had about $1 million. This year you have a little bit under that, $855,000. Looking through those, doing the testing, we didn't find any issues this year. I'm trying to think of which one. But we didn't find any issues with federal funds. And we tested this year, we tested the airport fund. And last, and that, that was all, that's all that we found. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for a very detailed report.
Okay.
And this is one of the best reports I've heard in presentation, and I appreciate it. Okay. It's easier to understand when you're going through some of these pages like that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any questions, comments? Anybody?
I'd just like to make one comment and really thank Anita and her staff and the other department heads. Without them really watching over the budgets and watching over the funds that come in and are expended, we wouldn't be in such excellent shape. It'd be very tempting at times as a city, because we do have a lot of reserves, to just say, well, let's not worry about the future and dig into those reserves and spend the money that we may need sometime in the future. And that's one thing that we're very, very careful on. It's something that we holds a tremendous standard bearer for the city to continue to keep us on a very positive fiscal approach and a very conservative approach with our finances. So I really commend the staff and thank you, Anita, for everything that you do day in and day out.
Right, we all agree with that, Anita. Year after year, you all have done an excellent job. Thank you so much. Thank your 25 employee staff there, too. Thank you.
We need to
approve this and take it for information, you know.
I'm sorry.
I beg your pardon. Okay.
So move, Mr. Mayor, that we accept this first reading of the ordinance accepting the fiscal year 2006-07 audit financial statement. Very good report.
Second. Any discussion? Any other discussion on that? If not, show of hands, please. Okay. Passes unanimously. Thank you all very much. Item 2, approval of the farmers market memorandum of understanding.
Yes, sir. Real excited about this because in 1954 the city began the operations of the Aiken County Farmers Market. I want to emphasize Aiken County because many times in the past we've gone to Aiken County for assistance for the farmers market, especially when we have to be room for paint or do other things, and there's always the reluctance saying, well, that's the city's farmers market, and we always have to come out and say, well, the sign says Aiken County's farmers market, and it's something we all value very much. Like with so many other things, we're trying to gain more partnership and better working relationship with the county on a number of joint projects. And it's a lot of these little things, like the EMS that we gave you over this summer, and this, and some others that we'll have in the near future. It's building relationships with the county so that we could jointly work together, whether it's on the farmers market or on roads, or when we talk on the next item on open space. We have to work together with them. So this is just one more example of a memorandum of understanding between us and the county on working together to take care of a very needed and very valued asset that we have here within our community. So for your consideration tonight, this is approval of a memorandum of understanding between the city and Aiken County concerning the Aiken County farmers market.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion? Second.
So moved, Mr. Mayor, and in making this motion to approve this, I'd like to invite those of you who don't visit the farmers market on Saturday morning to come out. It's such a wonderful social event.
Every Saturday morning?
Most Saturday mornings.
I'll second that, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. Item 3, report from the Open Space Task Force.
Yes, sir. I'll try not to get into a whole lot of detail because I know that the chairman of this task force committee and the task force, I think just about all the members are here tonight, they have spent a lot of hard work and effort on bringing together a report and a document that will make this community looking towards the future just better and better and better as we strive to have more green space and open space. If you recall, they came to the city about a year ago and said, here is the criteria that we want to use on open space. Prior to that, in 2003, we had the Environmental Conservation Foundation do a report explaining where we want to go with open space and what we'd like to see as the foundation here in our community. At the time they came to you in November, they asked that we do a study that would go ahead and inventory different properties that we may want to consider obtaining, and I'm not saying purchasing, I'm talking about obtaining in some fashion in the future. It's a very scientific report, and I'm not going to go into it. I gave you a little bit of the summary of what they had here. But the Open Space Committee is coming tonight with several recommendations, which I think are things that we need to really look at. But the major thing that is going to be discussed tonight is two things that council I hope would strongly consider. One, and that's to have a meeting or a discussion that will take place, called a public meeting, where we bring in different individuals from throughout our community and state to talk about open space and where do we need to go. Because one of the things that you do not have right now is it talks about open space outside the city, but not so much inside the city. And secondly, and I think this is even more important, in the past few years, you have added a few other committees or boards and commissions, those being Arts Commission. Mm-hmm. You have the Parks and Recreation Commission that have been added. And we think we're at the point, and this is such an important thing, that we need to consider starting an Open Space Commission. One that would meet on a regular basis for a season of time until they have adopted where we need to go, some of these reports we have, consolidate these things, and then they might be able to go to a maybe even a quarterly meeting, but then meet as needed as we have more and more properties that we're going to be looking at in the future to be considered as open space. I'd just like to commend Bill Reynolds and the committee. They have done a yeoman's job and put this all together, and I can't stress to you enough how important we as a staff feel that this whole item is on open space and how important it is to the future of our community. So if you don't mind, Mr. Mayor,
yes, sir.
Mr. Reynolds, come on.
Mr. Chairman.
Bill Reynolds, 1035 South Boundary Avenue. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to come before you and present a final report. Also share some recommendations and answer any questions that you have. But before I do, I would like to recognize some of my partners in crime in the audience. We have been at work for 17 months. I can't tell you how wise you were when you appointed these 10 people. They worked tirelessly, including some Sundays. And we've got Jenny Stoker here, Larry Byers, Karen Patterson, Kay Shirley, Harry Sheely, and if there's anybody else I'm missing, I apologize. But if you would just stand for a minute along with Sandra Cordley, because they have done a wonderful job. Months. Time sure flies when you have fun. The task force was directed to focus our efforts primarily on passive open space areas outside of the city, but within a comprehensive plan area. And I think the reason that probably we were directed in that fashion was because there are references in the comprehensive plan, specifically Goal 7.0 that talks about protecting open space, and 7.2, which talks about a regional open space plan, and the emphasis should be on locating potential park sites outside of the city limits with the goal of establishing a network of such areas possibly connected by bicycle walking trails and greenways. So that was really our focus for the entire project. We submit in our final report basically three parts. One, a methodology or a definition of open space, which is in attachment B in the letter from or my letter to you. Secondly, there is the methodology also on attachment B, and I want to just highlight the fact that that methodology has been worked on for over a year, and it was validated by the consultant that we hired, BioHabits, because we asked the professional to take this data and when they or these this criteria, and when they went out to these sites and they applied their science-based criteria, we asked them to also apply our open space methodology, and we were asking for improvements and recommended improvements. And basically, the consultant said, what you've got here is sound, it's workable, here are some recommended changes. And one Sunday afternoon, Karen and Harry and Sandra and I think Von Snellgrove met, and they considered those recommendations, and I think we adopted six of the eight or so that were recommended. So what we have before you, we feel very good about in terms of future use down the road as far as the criteria for evaluating open space. Now, the third piece is the inventory itself. And as Mr. LeDuc said, it's very technical. There's a lot of good stuff in here, more than you ever want to know about open space. But what's important to understand about this was a science-based study using scientific data that has been preserved on a disk so that 10 years from now, if we wanted to look at any of these sites, it's already been evaluated by a professional. So that has been preserved. So in that study, you'll notice that there were three sites that were particularly called out: Shaw's Creek, a New Carolina Bay that I didn't know existed by Citizens Park that is virtually encircled now by development. And finally, Upper Three Runs Creek down south, just outside of our comprehensive plan area. And it's interesting to note that supposedly has one of the most diverse aquatic insect populations ever documented in North America and possibly the world, right in our little backyard. As we think about it, Shaw's Creek is particularly critical. Tomorrow night, the Planning Commission will have a public hearing on the Northside Comprehensive Plan, which you will be then getting. And I'm sure you're already aware of it, but the Northside Comprehensive Plan has identified the Shaw's Creek area as the only greenway area in the Northside Comprehensive Plan area. So that's an area, as I understand it, 30% of the city's water comes from Shaw's Creek. It is a natural area. It hasn't been developed very much. And if the city was ever going to think about establishing some kind of a park greenway area, this probably is the best opportunity we would have. But it's not going to just happen by accident. So we would highlight the Shaw's Creek area for the reasons I just mentioned. Finally, recommendations. We've made three recommendations because we feel that if we want to preserve the legacy that we have with Hitchcock Woods and Hopeland's Gardens and the parkways and so forth, outside of the city, for future generations, as I say, we don't think it's going to happen by accident. So there's got to be a proactive movement, a partnership, if you will, among various segments of the community. And so we've recommended three things there, as you can see. One is to update and expand the comprehensive plan to reflect the long-range vision that you see for open space or green space for the city of Aiken. And you might want to expand it to include inside the city as well as outside the city. Secondly, As part of this, we would recommend that you marshal the necessary resources, including creating some body that has a continuity of effort that can bring additional resources and expertise to this effort. And that would be, you could ask the planning department to give you a list of credentials that might be helpful for this group. But we would really recommend that for your serious consideration. The third thing that we recommend is that, is that you decide to focus on something near term of importance, and we're recommending Shaw's Creek for the reasons I've already said. And lastly, we're recommending that you secure community input before you proceed in terms of how you think about the future of open space, green space in the city of Aiken. With that, I will be glad to take any questions you might have.
Well, thank you so much for your leadership here and the committee for what you've done. This is very comprehensive and detailed, no doubt about it.
I have one question, and it does concern me, and that is number two, identifying those areas outside of the city limits. What is your feel for being able to get cooperation in doing what you have suggested we do? Shaw's Creek is outside of our city limits zone. How do we get that preserved and maybe parkways built near that? What is the committee's best guess as to how we could quickly go ahead and get something like that done?
Well, I'm going to call on some of my counterparts that have a lot more experience in something like this, like Dr. Shealy.
Right.
But Harry, would you like to come up here and help answer this? I think, while Harry's coming up here, you know, part of the answer is conservation easements. Part of it is possibly a partnership with the county in terms of funding for some of the land. But this gentleman right here knows more about how to go about acquiring land than probably all of us in this room. So, Harry.
He overlooks, he gives me too much credit, to tell you the truth. But I do want to say one thing before I start. My name is Harry Shealy, and I live at 704 South Boundary Avenue. I also want to say another thing, that this committee would not have gotten as far along as it did were it not for Bill Reynolds' leadership. He kept us on task and on time, and I want to thank him personally for that. I'm sure I speak on behalf of the entire committee. But this piece of land came up for sale, as many of you on the council know, probably 5 or 6 years ago. About 4,000 acres of land that came up for sale as a result of the International Paper Company, as well as most every paper company in the state, selling off their timber interest. And we did not act upon it. We tried, but it was, at least from the land trust perspective, which is a hat I wear tonight as well, it was more than we could raise. It was about $5 million, and I didn't think that our land trust could do that. And we did discuss a partnership with the city, which leads me to what your question is. The only way that I think we can do it is identify the tracts of land that we would like to acquire, number one, and then you'll have to partner with other groups to do this. Since October of 2006, the land trust partnering with the county, and in one case partnering with the Department of Natural Resources, has received $1.7 million from the conservation, the South Carolina Conservation Bank. There are many willing partners out there that would help us, Beverly, with these kind of things if we simply go. So I think what we'd have to do is first of all isolate what particular tracts of land that were available and try to get as many contiguous and large blocks of this land that we could, and begin to work on it by partnering with South Carolina Department of Natural Resources in some cases, and partnering with Conservation Bank, also the county has been very, very helpful in these things, and I think that's how we have to go about it.
I want to say I appreciate the work that, that you guys, well, the committee did on this work, and I think it's really important that we do what we need to do as much as we can do before development starts going that way, and protect this property. We know we have to do that, and I think it wouldn't be a hard sell for council. It's just going to be how do we best get the funds we need to acquire the property.
Well, as I said, I think it'll be partnering with other people who have similar conservation interest in this area. After all, it does protect a great deal of the watershed for this city. Mm-hmm. I think we're all aware of the of the issues around water right now, since we haven't had a 1-inch rain since I think sometime in July in this area. So I think it sort of brings it into focus a little bit that we need to protect our water supply.
Harry, there's no doubt we need to protect this piece of land. What do we do with the land upstream from that, where the water comes from? That's
upstream from
the water. Heck of a question.
What's coming from Charles Bay?
That's what I thought we were talking about.
Well, we are talking about Charles Creek.
But the water comes in from other places.
Yeah.
To Charles Creek. To make up Charles Creek.
Yes. Well, that's sort of
I'm talking upstream.
I don't know how far upstream it is before you get to any large, bodies of water. And I don't know what you can do if it's already under private ownership, except that there are laws that govern what you can do and what you can't do around, bodies of water.
Yeah. I guess maybe another way to say that is we can protect what we have there. Good point. And we should, no doubt about it. But the problem can exist as far as pollution and that kind of thing.
I'll tell you, Roger and I had this discussion, and I think we even went towards hiring someone. I believe it was Smith. I don't know whatever became of that. But the idea was to take not the water. The whole world is a watershed. I mean, if you stop and think about it, the Sahara Desert would be a watershed for something if it ever rained there. So when you talk about watershed, you're talking about usually a large area. But really, oftentimes, what you're really talking about is the floodplain of the river, the riparian area or something like that. And Roger and I talked at one time, and this is something that could be done, is that we could try to get a mitigation bank set up so that we could buy that land under mitigation and use it as a mitigation bank and trade it off to people who want to develop other places and sell it and protect it that way. And that's one of the ways you can do it upstream, too. It becomes very advantageous for landowners if they get in one of these banks to actually sell their land and put conservation restrictions on it. So that's one way we can do it. There are lots of different ways to explore.
Yeah. And if you're concerned about our water supply, if that's the number one concern we have, then the closer we get to the water treatment plant, the more important it becomes to acquire or to obtain conservation easements. If we're concerned that someone upstream might dump something or something could get into the water supply, currently, because there is no impoundment of water, that water would get to our treatment plant very quickly. A good case, as an example, was when Carlisle Fire occurred about 9 years ago, just the runoff from the burning tires within their plant had to travel across the ground maybe a quarter or half mile to get to the stream, but that water, although it was not toxic or cause any problems, the odor from it was such that people didn't want to drink the water supply. But that got into our system very quickly. If you took, for instance, the area called Reynolds Pond, it used to be a large impoundment area, and dammed that up and created a reservoir type of effect, anything like that would help slow the water down and dilute the water if you're concerned about a situation as far as something getting in the water supply. What we're looking at here, though, is much broader than just a water supply, though, because, again, we're looking at different plants and different other species and other things within this entire area. If you would ask just myself, I'd say that our most important area is from I-20 south, but we're also talking about we want to obtain as much property as possible over a period of time north of I-20.
I tend to agree. But and toward that end, I think we already have helped the city on one tract of land.
Yes.
We refer to it as a Waters tract. The donor was Waters. That was his last name. I've forgotten how many acres it was.
60.
But as soon as we got it, we gave it to the city and took a conservation easement back from the city on the piece of property. So, you know, we'd be happy to partner with the city and use the resources available to any land trusts that, you know, that are normally there.
What happened to the 4,000 acres?
It was bought. I know that the Broadus Siegler, the late Broadus Siegler, was very was tied into it. He was one of the people that was buying it, and there was another gentleman out of Florida whose name I cannot recall at this moment, who were the primary movers in acquiring this land. And they bought the 4,000 acres from International Paper Company, and I used 4,000. It might have been more, it might have been slightly less, but 4,000 was sort of a round number. But they bought the land, and they started selling it off in large blocks to people who wanted to put whatever out there. You know, a lot of people started buying it as investments.
They timbered it. They timbered some.
Well, IP timbered it right up until the moment the ink was drying on the sale, I think. And it started off at $6 million, and it was because they kept devaluing the property by cutting the trees down. I think by the time of the sale, it was down around 5 or maybe high 4 million. You know, it was right around 5. But they cut trees right down until the ink was drying.
I was disappointed that we didn't go ahead.
I was too.
Something
there. I was too. But, you know, you can't win them all, as they say. Yeah, but I did hope that we would do something on that. But that's what I suggest to answer your question, is that by partnering with a number of different agencies, and as I said, the Conservation Bank has put $1.7 million into Aiken County in about a year's time. So it's not a bad record. Any other questions?
Yeah. Harry.
I'm sorry.
I noticed, and Bill too, I noticed there's this recommendation for an open space commission, but when I listen to you, you know, talk about the mitigation, the easements, the leverage, the outside funding, working with land banks, et cetera, it occurs to me, I mean, a commission, of course, is made up of volunteers, but nevertheless, having a staff person and running it is an expense. Would we be better off to hire someone, an urban land conservation person that has experience with this sort of thing, to really get us off to a flying start on someone who would be familiar with the possibilities, perhaps more so than a very good-hearted, well-meaning citizen, you know?
Well, I'll speak for Bill. Bill can speak anytime he wants to, but we discussed that on the committee as well, that it really needed, we would really like to see a staff person with the city that took the point on all of this stuff, and that was one of our considerations that we made. I think you're exactly on target with that.
Well,
and then they can mobilize the resources in the community that they needed.
And when I was trying to read this book, I'm not going to say I read it, I was trying to read the book.
Put you to sleep.
Well,
almost as good as that.
I didn't go to sleep, but I didn't know what it meant a lot of times. And I just thought, you know, maybe this is the time, if we're real serious about this, and this is crucial right now, that we don't need to be learning over the years, if we can find somebody that we could hire, maybe.
Well, somebody that has an understanding of it and could mobilize the resources that already exist in this community, and it's beyond just Aiken. I mean, there are all kinds of conservation organizations, and I don't have any proprietariness about the Aiken County Open Land Trust. If somebody wants to give land to Nature Conservancy or Ducks Unlimited or whatever, I'm perfectly happy that the land is preserved.
That may be a better idea than a commission, and that's why we wanted to bring this to council. Because you've got a vision, you know, for what you think ought to be the next 25 years, and by you getting some input from the community and getting your heads together and forming a vision, it may turn out that is the way to go, as opposed to a commission of volunteers led by somebody on the staff. Our thought was, you try to get people with very specific skills and the time and interest and passion to be willing to do this. But it's sort of a high-powered commission in terms of their expertise. But you probably could slice through a lot of things a whole lot faster if you had one dedicated resource that was experienced.
Well, it's just your book really helped me, humbled me, as far as my feeling that perhaps I could understand all this the way I thought I could. And so that would be my suggestion.
Bill made a point about up to three runs, and I would just like to say it used to be considered the most insect-diverse stream in the temperate zone of the world. Now it's the most insect-diverse stream in the world. It's right here in this county. Most people know nothing about it, but it is the most insect-diverse stream in the world. People say it's only because it's been studied so much, but the only reason people keep studying is because they keep finding new insects. And they go back and look for some more.
Well, let me ask a question about this biohabitatus.
Habitat.
Mm-hmm. Are they such an organization that could help lead this effort beyond what they've already done here? I mean, could they take that leadership?
I would, if you're going to open up that...
Well, I mean, one company, a possibility.
Yes. I think that, but they're going to be, they're going to be a consultant, and you're going to have them for a limited amount of time, as opposed to if you hired somebody full-time, employee of the city, then you're going to be able to direct all their movements.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that they couldn't tap into other resources.
Sure.
Bill, where is this group out of the biohabitat?
I think it's Durham, North Carolina.
I think it is, yeah.
Okay. I was looking at the data on historic sites, and some of the sites that I thought would have shown up does not show up on this sheet in terms of religious institutions. But anyway, that's...
My feeling is they drew upon archives to get this data.
Okay.
And the way I look at it, I noticed there was one in there that said Pickens House on Gregg Street. And we know that the Pickens House was moved to the University of South Carolina Dayton's campus. So I think that's, using error. But I looked at it with the same thing, thinking that's surely more...
The three
more
that I thought would have shown up here.
And I think they picked that up in the archives.
Okay.
Yeah. So just...
The other thing is, too, and I think you mentioned this, somebody did the time before, we're also going to continue this. I hope we'll continue this to continue to look for green space within the existing city limits. And do we have a list of the property the city owns yet?
November 15th.
November 15th?
You said the end of the week?
Jane, can I address that?
Yeah.
About 10 years ago, some of you know Bob McCartney, and I did a study in Aiken County for DNR, and we looked at all pieces of tax-exempt land that were in excess of 100 acres to see what we could find. DNR did not move on it like we had hoped to, but then, governments are slow. But one of the things that we hoped to get out of it, and we used 100 acres as sort of a minimum because we didn't care whether, somebody owned a lot here or a lot there. We did care, but we just didn't have time to look at all of them. But actually, and I made a suggestion one time that before the city does anything with some of this large tracts of land, they ought to have somebody go out and look and see if there's something out there that is really valuable before it's destroyed. Now, I know that goes counter to governments because governments don't want anybody to tell them, what they can or can't do, with their land. But being a government and the property belonging to the people of Aiken, they really should go out and look and see if the habitat, is such that maybe there's some rare species of plants, animals, or whatever. Before it's ever disturbed, they should have some sort of a survey done on the land. And you don't have to have it done unless you're using government money. If you're using federal money, then the feds want you to do a survey of whatever, the land
plan to make sure certain things are not on it. But if you're not using any federal money, you can just go do what you want to. But I suggested that one time to, I've forgotten whom in the city, but that they should always look at a piece of land before they do whatever they want to do to change it to see if there's anything there that perhaps they should be aware of.
Do I sense the same sense of urgency among council that the commission, the task force feels about moving forward with this, particularly in trying to identify key areas and lining up whatever those resources that are necessary to capitalize on the opportunity?
Bill, I would say absolutely. I don't hear anyone saying otherwise. I certainly feel that way. And again, this is excellent work that you and the committee have done, and we agreed to go ahead with it before, and I would hope that no one has changed their mind here, that it's a necessity, that we it's something we ought to do.
Thank you
very much.
Mr. Mayor, I also think this is an excellent report, and thank this committee for all the hard work that they put into this. And I think, right now we need to, whether it be this committee that looks into it, to find out, or staff, Roger, if a staff person would be the proper way to go, or a consultant, or a commission. I think if we could get some information on which way we think we should go from that standpoint, then I think we'd pretty much all be ready to move forward with it.
Might I suggest that several of us get together with key folks that want to be a part of this in a smaller group, talk about it a little bit more? And I get the feeling that you think that we ought to have a person on the city payroll, expert type person.
Off the top of my head, I think that's an excellent idea.
Mm-hmm. So it could be one of you, right? No. Would council agree to that?
We should look into that, and if any of the members of the committee, especially, or anybody, knows of people like this, or, I mean, I know there are organizations like this in the state, I just don't know the individuals, and...
I think that's an excellent idea. It's affordability of a person who has expertise in all areas, who has the scientific background, who has the financial background, who understands everything about open space, is a rare person to find.
I'm sure it is.
You can find individuals who are expert in particular areas. What I would suggest is that we pull together Sandra Cordwell, who's been working with this, and a couple of individuals, and if you could, let us come back with some suggestions to you. It may be a case, I know that with ACOLT, they have an individual that is sitting down in the audience right now who is, I don't know what you want to say, he's more or less your consultant, right arm, and does the day-to-day things that need to be done. And, maybe that's an area that we go into. I think the more we can partner with people. We have $1 million, the county has money, ACOLT, has a lot of resources. We don't need to reinvent things all over again, but if we could, let us talk to ACOLT, let us talk to some others. I think we all agree that we want to move forward and that this is a very important aspect of our future. And I think that's where we want you all to see the urgency. And if you all see that, then let us come back with some suggestions that we can afford. So we don't spend all the money on property.
Well, I agree, and I think though that they've done the scientific background for many of these areas. I mean, this booklet is amazing, but I'd rather get somebody that knows about development rights, about how to trade off open space with these. I mean, that sort of thing.
Well, it's going to take probably several people working together, some consultants on various things, and as Roger said, we all know too. I think history tells us that we're not going to get very far, very successful, unless we partner with folks. This has got to be a big partnership. Everything we've done in the city, worthwhile, has been partnership. Whether it's with our citizens or no matter what it is, and so we've got to partner. And So whatever way it takes to get certain people together to come up with the way we should go, Roger, that's fine. I'd like to be a part initially of it, of a meeting, at least, when we start talking about it. And y'all would be a party, and whoever else we need to pull together. I mean, Harry, you've got so much expertise in history, and I know others do too, but I'm sure you've got some thoughts on this thing, and I'd be surprised if you didn't. So, okay, you want to organize a first meeting?
Thank you.
And that'll be the start?
Thanks.
You've already started, rather, but that would be the second phase, maybe. Well, it's just a study, so we don't need to formally approve it.
No, but if you could accept this report.
Well, we accept it. Sure.
And then we can move on from that point.
All right, let's have a motion and second to accept this.
Second.
Any discussion? Show of hands, all in approval. Okay, passes unanimously. Very good. Thanks again. Item 4, resolution to close the unopened streets of Ligon and Jasper Streets.
Yes, if council could turn to the last page of this memo, and you could take a look at it. A picture is worth a thousand words, and this picture shows the Pine Log Cemetery. On the right in the very middle of the page, you can see that. You got McCormick Street on the left, and on the very bottom of the page is Abbeville. Well, there is a portion of Ligon and Jasper Street that's a paper plat that has never had a road constructed on it. It's not a very wide road, so it's less than 30 feet wide. It's not being used, and we would like to go ahead and go to the county courthouse and declare that this unused piece of property would be declared not to be used as a road and become city property, and then council could decide what they want to do with it, unless council wants to decide right now. But you know, in the past, when we've had unopened pieces of right-of-way, you've done a number of different things. Sometimes you give it to one party, sometimes you split it, sometimes you kept it. But the first thing that has to be done is we have to go to the courthouse and get it to be declared as city property and not as a road use. So we're asking tonight permission to be able to take this property, to obtain a court order to close the unopened right-of-way portion of Ligon Avenue and Jasper Street, and then for City Council to decide what you want to do with this. We would like to have a portion along McCormick, since we own it to the north and south, and combine it so that we could get a little larger lot in there for some houses that we want to build. The rest of the portion along Pine Lawn, and on the south wing and several of these properties, that's again the decision that council could make at a later date.
Has Pine Lawn requested
Pine Lawn has requested that.
Okay.
And they're the ones that brought this to our attention. They said, we know it's an area that's not being utilized. If it can be utilized, we could have this piece of property. We could use it to put some storage sheds out there and maybe even to expand the cemetery at some point in time if necessary. But again, that's a decision you can make at a later date. We can't, even if you wanted to give it to them tonight, you can't do that because it is platted to be used as a road.
Mr. Mayor, I know the first time I saw this has been Sandra did that drawing and brought up the fact that these roads were here, and I think the committee that's working on Pine Lawn is here, and I think they'd like for us to go ahead and move this tonight and get this cleared up so that they could do what needs to be done over there. And I'd like to move that we go ahead and close the unopened streets on Ligon and Jasper, and that the deed be recorded to reflect that it's not a street any longer.
Second. Okay. We have a second. Okay. Any comments? Is anyone in the audience who wants to speak on this issue for any reason? Okay. We've got a motion and a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor.
Once the court declares that it would not be used as street anymore, we'll then bring it back to City Council and we can make a decision as to what you want to do with the property.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. We stand adjourned.
Thank you, Gary. You did a very good job, I believe.
Bye.